listening to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
Three are murdered by police in Oaxaca protest, including New York City journalist Brad Will. We are going to, you know, it's always very hard to sum up one's resources when a comrade who one knows has been in an event that we have been covering for many, many months now has lost their life. I felt this way certainly when they took Rachel Corrie from us, a wonderful heroine of the movement, and I certainly felt this way for that matter when we looked at the death of Stan Tukey Williams, and now we have another fallen colleague. You know, in response to a statewide work stoppage in Oaxaca, Mexico, plainclothes police unleashed a bloody massacre. Three people are confirmed dead with scores wounded in the shootings. Among the dead is Brad Will, a video journalist with the New York City Independent Media Center. The killings are now being used as a pretext by the Mexican federal government to launch a military incursion into Oaxaca City by troops. Indeed, they've already entered. And we will be joined by a number of people, but with us now is Chris Anderson, who is a representative of the New York City Independent Media Center. And we welcome you, and it must be extremely difficult for you.
Thanks for having me here. Everybody at the New York City IMC, Independent Media Center, heard about Brad's death on Friday evening. A lot of people were just gathering for a critical mass bicycle ride, which is the last Friday of every month, and people actually started hearing about it before the ride got underway, and then it quickly got out to the rest of the, you know, the New York City activist community that Brad was a really integral part of, and that is a very large community, and a lot of people very quickly, you know, heard about it, and you know, people are still having kind of a rough time, I think.
Let's find out a little bit more about who Brad was and the work that he was doing when you say he was an integral part, and of course what it means to have lost this brother.
Brad actually had been active in sort of radical anti-authoritarian politics in New York since at least the mid-90s. I mean, the first things I heard about that Brad was doing in New York, at least, were he was heavily involved in the Lower East Side squatters movement. And actually, in the mid-90s, and if you remember the East 5th Street demolition, he was actually the person who, one of the people who was standing on top of that building when the bulldozers were headed towards that building on East 5th Street. So, I mean, even then he was active and involved. He was involved with Steal This Radio, which was one of the original pirate radio stations in New York. He was active in the Community Gardens movement. And since the founding of New York Indie Media in 2000, he was an integral part of the New York City Independent Media Center. He provided kind of grassroots journalism on behalf of oppressed and struggling people, both in New York and all around the world. Brad, you know, started traveling down to Latin America quite a lot after 2001. And he visited at least, there might be other countries, but he visited Bolivia, Ecuador, Brazil, and finally Mexico. And he went to all of those countries he and some comrades of his came down to Bolivia, to Ecuador, to Brazil with these huge backpacks of media equipment that they then provided for the people engaged in largely indigenous struggles down in South and Latin America. So they could, not only was he trying to be a journalist, but he was trying to help them be their own journalists as well. So, you know, that was something that was very important to him. He was not only trying to tell people's stories for them, but help them tell their stories for themselves, which is part of what indie media is about. And it was part of something that was really, really important to Brad.
And from reports that you've gotten, what actually happened in Oaxaca?
From what we know, Brad was filming what was basically a paramilitary assault on one of the barricades in Oaxaca. In the past several weeks, there have been increasing paramilitary attacks on the protesters in the city. These are not so-called disgruntled ordinary citizens who want their city back. These are paramilitary forces allied with the government of the governor of Oaxaca, Ruiz. And they are, in fact, the killers have been identified preliminarily by reporters Sans Frontier, RSF, as actual government officials with the local governments allied with the PRI in Oaxaca. And Brad was filming an assault of one of these paramilitary groups on a barricade in Oaxaca. And as he was filming, he was shot twice in the chest and died on his way to the hospital. He was dead when he reached the hospital. And it's chilling, actually, if you can see the footage he was shooting at the time he was killed. So his camera was going when he was killed.
And we've also been joined by Alexandra Halkin with the Chiapas Media Project and John Gibler with the Independent. He's an independent journalist and human rights fellow for
Global Exchange. And let's skip to the present because a lot of people are very curious about what is happening right now after the intervention of the federal police. So, John, why don't you tell us what's going on?
Well, in the past few hours, the members of the APO and thousands of local residents took to the streets in marches, walking from three different points in the outskirts of the city in towards the Zocalo. They came within two blocks of the Zocalo, which has been occupied by federal police for the past 24 hours, but then turned up one of the touristy streets leading to the Santo Domingo Cathedral and set up a new protest camp outside of Santo Domingo, the cathedral here, which is about five or six blocks up from the Zocalo. They did not confront the police. They've held to their call to continue a nonviolent resistance, to hold barricades and to conduct marches throughout the city, but not to confront or enter into any kind of violent clashes with the police. The energy in the marches was really incredible, very high energy, people chanting and calling out. They just received information that the federal Congress and senators have passed a resolution calling for the governor, Ulysses Ruiz, to consider resignation or a leave of absence. And that gave a jolt of energy to the marchers as they walked within blocks of thousands of federal police, but then headed up towards the famous Santo Domingo Cathedral here in Oaxaca City, where, again, they have installed a new protest camp.
John, this is Chris with New York Indie Media. I actually saw your photos of the march. I believe they were your photos up on the New York City Independent Media Center website. They're pretty amazing and powerful photos of that march today.
Oh, thank you very much.
And I want to bring Alexandra into the discussion as well. And let's move now from the current back. Ken and I have been covering the extraordinary activities in Oaxaca for at least 5 months now and the activities of the teachers' union there and certainly the calls for the resignation of Governor Ruiz. Alexandra, maybe you can take us back and summarize the substance and the substantive feeling that led to this incredible encampment by the teachers and supporters, and also the takeover of major media outlets in Oaxaca.
Hi, everybody. Well, I haven't been living continuously in Oaxaca. I was there in a hotel the night of June 14th next to the teachers' union when the state police came in and broke up the encampment that they had in the Zocalo and the surrounding blocks. And that is really what led to the movement becoming statewide, the APO joining the movement, and really the call for the governor to resign. If the governor had not brought in those state police, it's likely that never would have, what is occurring now never would have occurred. But it was that incredible violence against, you know, peaceful protesting teachers that has led to where we are at this point.
There are a lot of other complaints going back a long time about Governor Ruiz. I don't know if you want to take that or John, but let's get some more background because he seems to be the issue right now.
John, do you want to?
Yeah, I could definitely jump in on background to Governor Ruiz, I see him as symbolizing the kind of fault line in the long-ruling Party of the Institutional Revolution, or the PRI here. The party's been falling apart for over a decade and, you know, suffered a severe loss with President Fox's election in 2000. Oaxaca has been one of the states where the party has entrenched itself most deeply, and the governorship of Ulysses Ruiz shows us the fractures in the party. As soon as the governor entered into office, he sent thugs calling themselves an autonomous union to shut down a newspaper here in Oaxaca City that has been critical, or had been critical, of his campaign, known as Noticias. That newspaper's offices have been occupied over a year and a half now. The governor then gutted the traditional tiling of the downtown Zocalo and ripped up several trees, which, you know, symbolically was like a shot into the heart of the city, turning people from all sectors of local civil society against him. He then closed the municipal palace and moved, or sorry, excuse me, the state government palace here in the Zocalo, and moved his offices out to the outskirts of the city. This is a part of his strategy to say no more protests in Oaxaca City, no more marches, no more protest camps here in Oaxaca. He also moved the state Congress miles outside of the city so that, again, protesters would not be able to reach easily, access their own representative offices of their representative form of government. When I arrived first in Oaxaca City, the taxi driver said, "Welcome to the ex-capital of Oaxaca," because the government offices have all been moved out of the city, and then later the state government was effectively shut down by the protests. Ulysses Ruiz also supposedly spent a lot of public money on what many people here consider bogus and very offensive public works projects, tearing up streets and ripping up old statues to build new ones that he said would be more attractive to tourists. Then it came out in July that those projects were cover-ups for money laundering for the PRI's presidential candidate, Roberto Madrazo, here in Oaxaca State. So when I spoke to people first arriving in Oaxaca in July and asked them, why Ulysses Ruiz, why now, after so many decades of government neglect and repressive act, did this unarmed uprising take place in Oaxaca? And people time and again came to the offense the governor had leveled on people, the insult to their dignity, by not ever consulting any sectors of civil society in his different projects and continually running against both the symbols and the spirit of local culture by uprooting the Zocalo, tearing up fountains, and this whole idea he had of forbidding protests in Oaxaca City.
And indeed, it would seem that it was the activity of the police that really spurred on and triggered, it was the catalyst for the teachers, who had, many of whom said they were going to return to work. But I wanted to also get into understanding a little bit more about the Oaxaca People's Popular Assembly, the APPO, and how that came to be and what its demands and sensitivities are, aside from the issue of calling for the resignation of Governor Ruiz. And which one of you with the cell phone, we're getting real actualities here, wants to feel that?
I can go in, but I don't want to monopolize.
Go ahead, John, monopolize.
Okay, we're going to start with John and then Alexandra. And I know that I see Chris here shaking his head, so clearly he has a number of thoughts and concerns about this critical issue that has been unfolding.
Excellent. Well, quick kind of brushstroke picture of the APPO. The APPO was actually created directly in response to the government repression on June 14th, as the teachers were being, you know, brutally attacked by the state police. Spontaneously, thousands of local residents took to the streets to defend them, and that defensive action ended up being successful. They surrounded the police, clashed with them for a while, and then ended up kicking them out of the town's center. And as a result of that, they organized a mega march, they called it, which is a march of over 500,000 people in a metropolitan area of only about 500,000 people. So people came in from all over the states, huge march. And as a result of that energy, they pulled together and held an assembly where they created this very much, you know, in construction structure that they call the Popular Assembly of the Peoples of Oaxaca, or the APO. And then since that day, the structure itself has been working. There's a provisional leadership. People are very careful to remind that this is not a tenure position, but the people have been elected in the assembly to a provisional leadership role. But also, just a quick story of how flexible the structure has been. When the women decided, a group of women that were camping out in front of the Secretary of Finance's offices here in Oaxaca City, they were making tamales and coffee one night to take around to different protesters. And they were joking and saying, well, you know, is this what women are only going to be able to do, is always brew coffee and make food for people? And they said, well, what about the women in Argentina who conduct their marches banging on their stew pots? They got really excited. They decided to hold their own stew pot march, also pulled together and created the Oaxaca Women's Association, and held out an incredibly energetic march of over 3,000 to 4,000 women banging on stew pots, which led them in the high energy to go and take over the state television station, Canal 9. The APO's response, instead of the provisional leaders getting upset that it didn't come from their orders or directions, they were honored and excited and went out to the barricades around Channel 9 to support the women. And I was really struck by that, the way that the leadership structure didn't try to, wasn't upset that there was a movement away from their authority or anything like that, but a recognition that this is truly a grassroots leaderless movement. But also the leadership structure has been used at times to try and confront what were several fuzzy areas, if not direct errors, within the movement. There were earlier in July and in August several violent aggressions against journalists. I know a man who was beaten with clubs because he ran. He was afraid when people tried to confront him and look for his credentials, and he ran away and was hit from the back. The APO leadership immediately condemned the action and said, we've really got to tone this down. Please understand why there's so much tension around the commercial media, but we need to be respectful of press workers. And so, again, you saw the structure there trying to engage in self-criticism and acknowledge when they do things, when they make mistakes.
I would also just add, too, if you want to see the APO or hear the APO in action, you can... We've got a link to their APO radio stream from New York City Indie Media. If you go to nyc.indiemedia.org, there's a link there which will link you directly to the radio APO stream, which has been down at times, and it was down at times yesterday when the power was cut to the university that they were broadcasting from. But I believe it is back up now, and you can actually listen into their radio and hear exactly what John is talking about, sort of this movement kind of shaping itself right in front of us. It's pretty amazing thing.
I just wanted to add one thing about the APO that I think is really important, is that it has really empowered a lot of people that before had never been involved in politics, had never been in any kind of social organizing, and it's a movement that isn't going to go backwards, right? I mean, these people that have now been engaged in barricades, have been engaged in, you know, moms with their daughters standing in front of the PFP as they're marching, are not going to just go, oh, well, and go back home, right? These are people that have really been empowered, and they're going to keep moving forward.
Alex, so can you make any sense of the politics in the legislature, the Mexican legislature right now, what's going on there, and what is the politics of the whole situation as far as you can see?
Yeah, I actually read something, I don't know, John, if you saw this in El Universal, that Ruiz, like, filed some kind of legal appeal to what the Congress had voted on. So he's actually trying to stop, he's saying that the Congress and the Senate don't have the legal constitutional right to make these proclamations about him resigning. So what I've been able to see up until this point is that he is still holding on, and it remain. You know, it's hard to say here. You know, I think that my feeling is that right now in Mexico City, the people in the Congress and the Senate are getting a bit freaked out. because they're seeing now people are coming back, they're mobilizing, people are coming out of the Sierra, they're coming from all these pueblos into Oaxaca City to set up this encampment and basically say, we're not leaving. And so I think that they're starting to finally say that this guy's got to go. You know, it's really the only way to resolve certain things. I mean, obviously not everything, but at this confrontational point that everything is at right now.
And Chris, people in New York are also agitating. There was a big demonstration in front of the Mexican consulate that Indie Media organized, and the website is chock full of information. Tell us what Indie Media is going to be doing in the future.
Well, I mean, at this point, Indie Media is providing coverage of trying to at least link up to some of the stuff going on in Oaxaca, but also cover the response to both Brad's death and the situation in Oaxaca from New Yorkers, the way New Yorkers are responding. You can see everything that's upcoming on our website. I know there are going to be a number of other mobilizations occurring outside the Mexican consulate throughout the week. 12 people were arrested there today. Many of them with Indie Media, most of them are released now. But it was a very, very intense protest. And people were chaining themselves to fences. They were lying down in the middle of the street, totally unpermitted. It was, you know, the kind of level of intensity I haven't seen in this kind of protest in New York for a while.
And I can't, again, we just have to dedicate this whole program to our good comrade, Brad, who has actually been with us for so many social activities and was truly committed to the cause of social justice within the world community. And Alexandra Halkin from the Chiapas Media Project and John Gibler, who's an independent journalist with Global Exchange, we'd like to thank you so much for joining us. And Chris, I know that you're going to keep us posted in the weeks to come. And one of the things that was very clear, you know, Ken and I have said it continuously, we've looked to Latin America, we've looked to people, Chicanos, and we've looked to our sisters and brothers in Mexico for the kind of protest and the kind of democracy that certainly we have not accomplished here. And there is much to be learned south of the border in perhaps the other Americas. And thank you, all three of you, for joining us. And again, Brad Will, who was killed in Oaxaca, is our theme for this evening. Brad, we will continue to do the work that you have always done in order to commemorate what you have given to media and the cause for social justice and peace.
Juntos vamos cumpliendo con la marcha de la historia para liberar el pueblo.
And for more information on the continuing struggle for justice in Oaxaca, Mexico, go to the New York City Indie Media website at www.nyc.indiemedia.org. That's www.nyc.indiemedia.org. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Dicen los patroncitos que el trabajo siempre se hace con bastantes resquirones. Y de Nuevo León a Texas han traído sinvergüenzas muertos de hambre por frijoles. Pero hombres de la raza se fajan y no se rajan mientras la uva se hace pasar. ¡Viva la revolución! ¡Viva nuestra asociación! ¡Viva huelga general! Ya saben los contratistas que ni caro ni barato comprarán nuestros hermanos. Pero como es bien sabido, para mantener familias más sueldos necesitamos. Ya está bueno, compañero, y como dice César Chávez, de esta huelga ganaremos. Abajo los contratistas, arriba nuestros
nuestros huelguistas que se acabe el esquirón.